Too legit to quit.
I'll leave that in. Hello, everybody. My name is Kate.
My name is Alan, and we are from ReverseThieves.com. If you want to ask us any questions, give us any show topics, comment on any of our previous episodes, or maybe weigh in on this month's discussion, then you can contact us at ReverseThieves@gmail.com, or you could go on our Happening Cool Discord.
And this month of the Speakeasy podcast, we are talking about our favorite anime-related topics, I guess, from 2023. Now that everything is a wrap for the year, we made our decisions, and I'm always curious to hear listeners' favorites from the past year. And also, I love going back and checking this because sometimes you forget that you watched a thing earlier in a year, if you were me. So it's just nice to like revisit. But before that,
this might Type Moon Minute was less news than I thought it was going to be, because the New Year's special was mostly like pre-recorded. There wasn't like a live like New Year's a thing. And so there was a lot less news than was expected. Like, there was no big new anime announcement. There was a trailer for the Witch on a Holy Night movie that's coming out this year, but that was already announced last year. So there was like no new strange fake news, no announcements. At the end of the month is the 20th anniversary of Fate's Day Night, so they're supposed to have a stream about that, and people are wondering if they're gonna like remake the, you know, somewhat lackluster Fate Path of the original Fate's Day Night by Studio Dean, or maybe there they'll announce something new, or maybe they'll be like, and a remake of the original Fate's Day Night or something.
The visual. But will they keep all the memes in?
That will have to be seen. If people still die when they are killed, will have to be seen. The New Year's stream started with one thing that I mentioned to Kate, which was they had Maya Sakamoto, who plays Jean d'Arc in several Type Moon properties. She went to France because last year they had Ayako Kawasumi go to England. So this year they had Jean's voice actress go to France. So she like visited several like places. They had like a French tour guide who spoke Japanese, who like was escorting her around to like various Jean d'Arc related things in France. She apparently got very emotional when they like went to like the grave of Jean d'Arc, and they were talking about all that. The part that I mentioned to Kate, which I found amusing, is they went to this like Jean d'Arc themed like cafe.
For some reason, I don't know why they're trying to say theme park.
No. Come! Ride the burn on the steak roller coaster.
I was like, I knew that wasn't what it was, but that's where my mind went.
But apparently, that was the one place that, like most of the other places the tour guide picked out, she picked out that one because she was into coffee. So it gave her the ability to A, visit this Jean d'Arc theme cafe, B, buy a bunch of coffee from Europe, from a European place, and then bring it back home. So
she just has like suitcases.
So people were joking that they were wondering if next year they'd go for the other main Saber face and have Sakura Tange, who plays Nero, go to Rome and do a Nero Claudius like tour. And then they announced the New Year's servant, who was, I will just say, Fate Samurai Remnant Saber. It's like a big secret of the game. You don't actually find out who they are until like 3/4 of the way through the game. And but I know a lot of people were mad for somebody, you know, for, you know, a franchise that's usually so good about guarding its spoilers. They were like, and that's their name.
Especially because that game's still fairly recent, yeah. Right?
They're just putting out DLC at the end of the month. So.
Yeah. Wow.
And then they announced, so they were the New Year's servant. And then they announced that there was going to be at the middle of the month, which will be tomorrow from the day we're recording this, a Fate Samurai Remnant collab event, which was pretty shocking because usually the collab events, when you know they have a collab with another part of Type Moon in FGO, they usually happen during Golden Week, which is also like famously in Japan, like one of the most successful, profitable weeks for mobile games. So people were wondering, so were we going to have some different event during Golden Week? Or are we going to have a second collab, like something like Witch on a Holy Night, since that's getting a movie this year? And so we'll have two collab events this year. So that's still unknown, but we will be getting some Fate Samurai Remnant stuff tomorrow. And they at least announced like the first part and the characters that were coming out in that, which was a little controversial because there were some people expected like Tamamo Aria who were not on that list. Those characters will come out. I'm not worried about that, but apparently some people really, really wanted Tamamo Aria, and she was at least not in, one of the announced servants that was going to be in this event. So there was a little bit of murder about that. Other than that, like there was like an update on the Fate Extra Record game, which is the remake of Fate Extra. And that wasn't even at the New Year's thing. That was like announced on like the game's Twitter like 2 days later. A little quiet for a New Year's. I guess you can't have like, I think it prevents a little bit of like Marvel fatigue or like some of those other fatigues that we don't have a Typhoon anime every year. So maybe, or you know, we do have the movie for, you know, Witch on a Holy Night. So it's not like nothing or like it's totally stopped. But it was a little less than I expected. I think it was a lot less than a lot of people expected, but it was nothing. It was just, I think people had like all these crazy dreams, like they're going to announce Girls Work is back on or, you know, a total remake of Fate Stay Night and the Fate Strange fake anime and Fate Requiem anime and, you know, other such ideas.
I thought they already announced the Fate Strange fake anime.
They announced that it was coming, but they haven't, like, they don't have it like a date. I think people are expecting like a...
Okay. I watched an episode. I know that it's real.
I think people were expecting coming, you know, summer 2024. I don't think they expected it to be like the whole season drops in January, but I think they were expecting a date. If nothing else, next month I'll talk about what we got out of this straight, Fate Strange Fake, the Fate Samurai Remnant collab. We're recording next month's podcast a little early, so if we did it normal time, I might be able to talk about the Valentine's Day event, but I'll just do that in March. Other than that, I will see you next time, Type Lunatics.
All right, so we have a few categories that we'll be discussing for our favorites of 2023, and I think we're gonna start with TV series. We're gonna do some music, movies, characters, so, and, you know, many of you have probably been listening to this and know how this works for us. So we will trade back and forth. I do not know what's on Al's list. He doesn't know what's on my list. Well, except for one thing that we just discussed. But otherwise, you know, it's like I am getting surprised along with all of you. And we'll see where we overlap. We'll see where we disagree. And with that, I want to know top anime, Al. No, we're not going to do like number, right? Like we don't usually like.
I usually number them, but you don't have to.
I don't know how to number them.
That's fine. We always do this. I always number mine. You always just do yours, but like list. Like you don't have like a. You don't pick favorites. I just pick a number.
I mean, I pick general favorites, but I'm like, oh, is this one the number one or the number
you don't
two?
Pick, like,
I
don't you know. Don't number them.
Okay.
I usually just number them. Just I don't know. Like, if you, I always feel like if some days you ask me, my numbers would be different if I... Clearly, Sorcerer, Stabber, Orphan, Chaos, and Urban Rob. I just put that one there.
Wait, is it really on
no,
the list?
No, no, God, no.
I was like, whoa, upset. Like, a true turn that no, I could not no, see coming.
No, it was garbage, Kate. Pure garbage.
Okay.
I just oh, put thank it down God. To be silly.
Oh, thank God.
I was almost tempted to do the same things when we were doing the endings. I didn't put it on the list, so I don't fully remember, but that one Witch from Mercury
oh, God.
Ending.
Oh, God, that ending.
I almost put that as a joke as my third best anime ending of the year, but I was like, I'll do the Orphan one.
Oh, my
sticker.
God. All right, you got me. You got me.
My number five is actually Hell's Paradise, Jiku Kuraku.
I didn't finish that show. Interesting. Tell us.
I just
well, don't tell us the ending, but you know.
I thought it was interesting. I liked the fights. I thought it was an interesting mystery. I don't know. I liked it because it felt like a shonen series. Like I felt the fact that it was a shonen series that was planned out to be a set amount of time, and that like it had like a. The author already knew the, like, arc of the story, and maybe not, like, every detail, but at least, like, the general arc of the story, and thereby had it plotted out, and thereby when characters died and, like, when things happened, it was, had forethought and wasn't just, oh, shit, I've got to get this out by the end of the week or month, and, like, here's my story. I don't know. I think there's a certain sharpness to things because of that. And, it's only the first half, so I assume the second half is probably going to come out sometime this year. Because it's already done. The manga is like long over, so I think it's just more a matter of when the team lines up again to do the second season. I don't know. I enjoyed it.
And I feel like this is one that I haven't seen on other people's lists, so it's nice to hear something people can go back to that, like, including myself,
mm-hmm.
and, like, you know, like, oh, probably one you might have overlooked.
Yeah, and,
Okay, I'm gonna go with this one. I'll do this one as, like, my number five. Not number five, but, like, my not number five is Overtake. And I really wasn't expecting this show to stick with me that much. If you can make me care about Formula 4 racing, I really think you deserve a special award. And I feel like this was my favorite sports series of the year. And it really did a great job of telling both the sports story and, like, the emotional B-plot story very well. I found myself very moved and connected to the characters, and I think it has a really good ending. And yeah, I felt like it really followed through on a lot of stuff that's in the first episode. And this was also an original work for the season, so very impressed. And maybe I'm also even more biased towards this because I was also watching MF Ghost at the same time. And MF Ghost has a bit of a thumbs down from me. So I was like, I'm watching two racing shows at the same time. Oh, this one's really good. This other one is not so much.
I feel like you would have, if you had just asked Kate beforehand, you would have guessed it would have been the other way around.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't know what fully to expect from MF Ghost, but I could talk for quite a while about what I think it's doing wrong. But that is not what we are here to focus on. Overtake. I think this is also a show that probably got overlooked by a lot of people. It's short. It's well animated. It's thoughtful. Definitely check it out.
I talked a lot about this already, but I just wanted to go back also because it came out during like the first half of the year. So I think it's easy to forget certain things then. But I wanted to go back and just reiterate, major thumbs up for Vinland Saga Season 2. As I've always said, it was kind of always the controversial season because it's like the shift into the actual story of Vinland Saga. And so, you know, I think there were a lot of people who expected it to just be more Vinland Saga Season 1, not realizing that Vinland Saga Season 1 is the setup for the real story of Vinland Saga, and thereby it soured certain people and other people. Like, if you stuck with it, you're like, oh, wow, how, like, this is really, like, you know, moving stuff, and, like, well, this, like, character growth and, like, impact could only come after we saw the main character so long in Season 1. You know, how he was there as like this, you know, ruthless killer, obsessed with revenge. You know, if you see that in a back, you know, in a one episode backstory, it has a different feel than you knowing that character for a long time and then seeing his transformation. Like, one feels like a transformation. The other one just feels like a informing of the character you know now. And I think it hits very differently and it has a very different impact. And it will just have a different impact on the series going forward. So I thought that was really just well done. And, you know, if you maybe were a little bored with the beginning of the farm arc, once again, it's an endorsement to, like, you know, stick with the series. And, like, I think the emotional payoffs are worth it later on. And also just, like, you could very clearly at the end of the series see how, you know, our main character, Thorfinn, is not out of, like, a world of violence. But he's chosen, like, he still lives in a world of violence, but he is not going to participate in that. Even if the world is violence, doesn't mean that you have to go with that system. And so I just wanted to remind people, and just, it was just a really well done season and just a really well done show. And I hope that we call in the future, we can get a third season.
So going back also to something that was earlier in the year, but I don't think people forgot about it because at least when we're at conventions, it certainly wasn't forgotten. But earlier in the year, we got Trigun Stampede, and the story is not complete yet, but I was so impressed with this retelling, re-origin. Like, I just thought, you know, I think this is something we've talked about a little bit, but like, I just had to put it on here, obviously because I enjoyed it, but also because, like, gutsy. I thought it was really gutsy that they decided to do this when so much anime right now is just, like, being as faithful to this source material as possible, even when that might be a detriment to, like, the storytelling in the form of anime. And so for them to take a story that is really beloved and take this character and, like, twist it in just a different way, I was just, like, very impressed that they, and bold, that's what I say.
And also that it was successful, I think, is kind of shocking. That, like, I feel like if you play it safe and you do it well, it's like, what do you call it? It's boring, but at least, like, you know, as long as the, you know, source material wasn't like Bunny Drop, we're like, why did you stick to the original? You know, you won't impress anybody, but you won't lose your shirt most of the time. But I feel like a lot of times when people try to get clever, you're like, oh man, maybe you should have just played it safe there, buddy. So I think it was quite impressive that it not only was bold, but it actually was, like, generally regarded, and I think regarded by us as, like, actually, like, accomplishing their goal. While I feel like not, while still retaining, like, the core themes, which I think is, like, it didn't feel like it, like, just was like, I guess they're Trigun character names, but this is just a different story with the different. I feel like it still had the same ideas and themes, but it felt like a new take on it.
And I think Vash's core character is the same. And so that's very important to the story. So, yeah, kudos to Studio Orange. They've been doing so much interesting stuff.
I'm hardly the first person to make this joke, but it just popped into my head because we were talking about this. So, like, this year, are we going to get the Outlaw Star remake? Because, you know, that year, the year that Trigun came out, was famous for, like, being three super popular space westerns that came out in the West, which were Cowboy Bebop, Trigun, and then also Outlaw Star. But Outlaw Star was definitely the lesser of the three. I don't even feel like that's too controversial a statement. But, like, I've seen several people joke that, like, when are we going to get the, like, you know, Outlaw Star, like, you know, reboot or remake or, you know, school or something. Like, you know, some new iteration of Outlaw Star.
Well, what about Cowboy Bebop?
Well, you remember that there was some reattempt at Cowboy Bebop. You may want to forget it.
Wasn't that 20? That was 2022, right?
Yeah, no, but the idea is that 2022 was Cowboy Bebop. This year was Trigun. So obviously this year is going to be a different order of, like quality. So Cowboy Bebop was the first. Trigun was second. Maybe in the reverse order of, like, goodness. So, like, even though...
So wait, you're saying the Outlaw Star remake is going to be incredible.
Amazing. Like, you're just, like, going to blow your mind. You're going to be like, how could they take... You'd be like, how could they take such a simple idea and make such a powerful anime that made me cry at the end and, like, evaluate life itself? You're going to be in... It's going to be the Cowboy Bebop of remakes. You're going to be in... Not a dry eye in the house, Kate. Not dry eye in the house. Gene Starwind will impress you. His character arc.
That would be a first.
Catgirls will be back in. I don't think there'll be anybody surprised, but I feel like I had to throw on Dr. Stone, The New World. We got both parts of, you know, part one and two of Dr. Stone, The New World this year. Dr. Stone's still awesome. A great story. the first time they're meeting somebody outside of like the initial area that they've met, sinister villains, you know, interesting science, some cool cat and mouse, just everything you want out of Dr. Stone. Good middle story, and it will be announced that this year we'll be getting the final arc of Dr. Stone. So I look forward to that. And, you know, I've talked about that series a lot on this series, so on this whole podcast, so I don't think I have to go too much more. Just wanted to shout out, still Dr. Stone, still great. Looking forward to more.
A series I suspect might be on Al's list, but maybe not. That I wanted to mention, which we talked about pretty recently on the podcast, is Undead Murder Farce.
That's my number two, so we might as well just...
Perfect! I was like, I feel like it's going to be on Al's list somewhere. Yeah, I mean, again, we talked about it fairly recently, so I don't feel like I need to reiterate too much, but like, quirky and like making it work, like very unexpected show, greater mystery isn't solved, I feel like we know the path to solving it in a certain sense, if that makes sense. So like, I felt satisfied enough by the end of the story, and knowing that there are more books and stuff, I don't know if we will really ever get any more anime of it, but I still, like, it was just so fun and clever, and, like, the dialogue was so good, and I feel like I don't get to say that about anime a lot. That's just not always, you know, it.
I think, like, the last time we said something like that was, like, Odd Taxi, which was, like, super noted for that.
And so it just felt, like, a little bit different, you know.
Also, I was just happy that we could positively talk about a detective series on this thing podcast. It seems like a while since we've been able to.
We had on Taxi, like you said.
Yes. So we one a year, cool.
Yeah, like, and just I and like, so I feel like it was just a show where some really weird shit happens in this show, but somehow I just, like, accept that it's all happening. Mm-hmm. And just fun. So fun to watch.
Yeah, no, I enjoyed it. I like, you know, the kind of League of Extraordinary Gentlemen vibes of, like, you know, here are all these, you know, fantastic literary characters reimagined, kind of all crossing over and, you know, taking their abilities and powers and skills to the extreme.
It was also interesting to see how they were depicted, I think, because maybe it's just me, but I was very surprised that, like, Holmes was there, because there are very pretty characters in here, mm-hmm. but Holmes is not one of them, and he's a different look. He's more of the, like hawkish sort of looking, and Lupin is the super pretty boy in this series, and it's like, oh, I see interesting preferences here, like, and just stuff like that. I do, the only thing I would say, I guess, now that you said that, Al, is like, I lament that perhaps we won't get to see all the other literary characters that appear in later books. That would be very interesting. All right, well, since we shared that one, I'm going to go because I want Al's number one to, like, have its moment. Mm-hmm. Let's see. Where am I going to go next? I think I'm going to go with My Love Story with Yamada-kun to level 999. And I'm glad to see that this show, I feel like, continues to be popular. Like, I see it on, like, the popular lists and stuff. And I'm glad that it has, like, stuck with people. This was a really fun romance from earlier in the year about this young woman who is in college, and she starts playing, you know, a MMO because of the guy that she's dating, and that falls apart, and she ends up meeting Yamada, who is in her guild. And so it's got like the nerd connection, and it's got just like this really, you know, well done romance and like a lot of friendship story, and has a really satisfying like ending to the anime where like feelings are said, but you know that there could be more story. And I think this is an ongoing, I believe it's a web manga. And the books are going to start coming out in English this year. But yeah, there's more, I think there's more story to it. But like, ugh, nice to have like a romance I could really get behind for the year. I don't feel like it doesn't happen enough, I think, at the moment. Although I also could have picked Skip and Loafer for there. But I didn't quite love the
anime adaptation.
Yeah, the pacing of it. So, gonna go with Yamada-kun. Really good. Very fun. Go back and watch. All right, Alan, what was the number one?
I feel like a lot of people could call it the basic bitch choice.
I feel like maybe, why don't I feel like I know the answer? It could be that. Okay. Oh yeah, it could be that. Okay. Okay. Wait. Okay. I have my. Oh wait. Should I guess?
Sure.
Witch from Mercury.
No.
Oh. Okay.
I picked Oshinoko.
Okay, that was the other one that could have been there.
I really liked Oshinoko. I thought it was an interesting mystery, like an interesting insight into like the Japanese entertainment industry, like some great characters, some great comedy. But it's technically a mystery. So
I don't feel like it. Why are you saying technically?
I guess. Oh, yeah.
It is 100% a mystery.
So we had two good mysteries. We had Undead Murder First. And we had,
I think there were three. I have one that's not, that almost made my list, but. Mm. Which I will mention at the end. We'll have an honorable mentions section.
So I just feel like it was super popular. So I don't think it was like, that's why I said it was like the basic bitch.
Like, oh, it's everybody's number one or whatever. Totally get it. And I have, you know, Oshinoko definitely stuck with me. I loved it too. I think my, because I also had it as like a possibility. Mm. But I think I really want to know the answer.
Mm, yeah, like it could be like a super lame answer to the mystery.
Or like how it plays out. Mm. Whereas, not to say you can't pick it, I'll pick it. Yeah. Like I almost picked it too. But I think that was where I was like
hesitant. Yeah, no, it's fair.
Because like Murder Farce, like I said, at least I basically know the answer. I don't know how they're going to get to the answer or like get to the resolution, but like I know the answer, but like here we really don't know, and so I'm like, what's it gonna be? Don't be like I don't know. Oh, so bad ending. I don't know.
Yeah, the only reason I think I wasn't as thrilled with Witch for Mercury's ending as a lot of other people. I didn't think it was bad, but I think if like the rest of the series was like a 9 or a 10, the ending was like a 8. Just felt a little drop off to me, but that's me. I didn't feel it was bad. It just felt like it just wasn't like some of the heights of the earlier parts, but what, you know, Al's gonna be Al.
I think, what's wrong with this choice? I don't understand.
I feel like now
sometimes you like to be different, I guess. You like to be like, oh, I'm going to pick something nobody expected.
I guess I am now like just justifying my head blind and pick Witch for Mercury.
Sorry. I didn't mean to like get in your head about it. I was just like, because it's on my like possibilities list. My actual final pick, which like, I don't know. Again, it was hard. It was really hard to narrow it down. I thought there were a lot of, I thought this was a really, like a pretty good year for anime. I probably say that every year. Like, is there really a year where I'm like, nothing was good?
There are seasons.
Seasons for sure.
Sure. I feel like years, like we usually have a few, we usually have some good selections. It's usually seasons where you're like, that was a stinker. That was like maybe one good show, or was there a good show this season? Like, you can get some real stinker seasons, but I've yet to be in the fandom long enough to be like, this year was just garbage.
Like, yeah, there was nothing. So, and this one, I talked a whole lot about, so it should come as no surprise, but also means I'm not going to talk about it again. And that's the finale of Attack on Titan. So
yeah, I just didn't see that, so I have no ability to weigh in on that.
But, like, I feel like I had to pick it. It was the end of this epic. I ultimately, like I said on the whole long podcast where I talked about it, like, the ending is really, ugh, but, like, I'm glad that I saw it all. So, yeah, just like a big, I think it's like a big deal that it was finished in a certain sense. So that's why I had to pick it and put it on the list. So speaking of honorable mentions though, so honorable mention to Pluto, another great detective anime of the year, almost made it. I think if I hadn't picked Titan, I probably would have picked that one. And like just, you know, having an Urasawa anime is like very exciting.
Yeah, like there like are a few things. Like I didn't pick the second half of like the Lum remake because like even though they did introduce Ryunosuke, but it's worth mentioning that you know, that was great and it's coming back next year. I did like the season of The Ancient Magus' Bride. I thought the mystery there was pretty entertaining. And when we, you know, get to the full mystery of the school and what's going on.
I think probably a lot of listeners are like yelling right now at the podcast. Don't worry, everybody. We love Frieren. Don't think that you've misunderstood something. But it's still running right now. And that's the way we've done it for years at this point.
I was about to say, if Frieren does not appear on my list next year, my God, what an amazing year must have been. Right.
They're like, we didn't even remember. No way.
Well, we're all going to be blown away by the Outlaw.
Yeah, you're going to have to pick it for all five, Al, because it was so good.
We're going to be like, number one through five, just all Outlaw Star, just so amazing. Really, literally every other anime just paled in comparison to Outlaw Star 2024.
But yeah, just as a reminder, I don't know, you know, how it sort of started, but anyway, we make it a rule that, like, it has to be, has a completed season. Like, Frieren is continuing. It's not, you know, hasn't finished. So that's just, like, an arbitrary thing that we do. But that means it can be picked for next year. The same thing happened, I believe, with, like, Ranking of Kings, where, like, I ended up picking it, like, a different year because, like, it was still running. So those are some honorable mentions. Okay. Openings, endings. Where are we going to go first?
Let's do endings. They're always, like, neglected more.
Oh, I like it. Okay. I'm going to go with Hypnosis Mike. Just to throw something, like, really different in here. The second season ending. Oh, I'm sorry. Hypnosis Mike. What is the whole name? It's something like Rap Battle Anima Plus or whatever is the full name of like this season.
Because if you don't put that in,
no one will know.
Yeah, you'll get confused with all the other highbrow
Hypnosis Mike shows.
Yeah. You'll get confused with the English Hypnosis Mike.
And the ending is called Next Stage. And I actually isn't listed with a like a band or a musician with it because like when you look it up, because every episode they have different rap groups do the song, and so part of the song is like changes I mean, it repeats eventually because there aren't as many groups as there are episodes. But, like, basically, the song itself, like, part of it is the same every time, and then part of it is different. So it's not listed as, like, oh, one creator. And it always just, like, it always got stuck in my head every time I listened to it. And the animation itself is really fun. It's, like, this much more, like, sketchy, loose line of the characters, so it's really fun.
You know, it's funny because it's probably going to be on neither of our lists, but it's probably going to be on a lot of other people's lists. Who does? None of us probably picked anything from Chainsaw Man. Was that this year?
Was that last? I think that was last year.
I don't think any of us picked from Chainsaw Man either. Just
I mean, you know, I wouldn't.
No, and it's just funny because like that one had like all the high production and like they had a different ending each time. All my endings are from shows that we wouldn't pick for. Well, I picked Not Enough by Maison Des, which was the second ending from Yurasai Yatsura because it wasn't eligible last year. And I really liked the ending. The art is, I forget the name of the guy, but he does a lot of stuff with Nisho Inshin. But it's like a really catchy song. Has the three, I guess you could consider them the three main ladies from Lum and Ataru. And just very catchy, great little, you know, ending. I very much enjoyed it. And once again, reminder that there was still Lum coming out this year. And it was still delightful. A little honorable mention to the opening, but I still feel it was less than the first opening to the new remake. But it was still pretty good. Not on my top three openings list, but I just wanted to. Still fun.
I think it definitely, this series always has really great music, for the most part, and this ending is no exception. The most recent Spy Family ending, Todome no Ichigeki by Vondi featuring Corey Wong, it's just very dancey, which I think they do a lot for the endings, and the imagery for it is like, sort of like a almost like a digital collage style, and it just like always made me get up and like want to dance a little bit along to it, and just had like such a good like vibe for the series, and stood in contrast to like the opening animation, which I wasn't crazy about. Song, like, I didn't really have a problem with, but wasn't like super crazy about the opening for the season.
I think it's one of those things that stands out more just because how amazing the first two openings were. That like, I think you would have been, I think the third Spy Family opening feels like if it was some other show, you'd be like, oh, that was an opening. But since the other two were so amazing, you're like, sorry, you had the unfortunate, position of being the third child, some much more successful siblings, my friend.
There are just a lot of things about it that bother me, and like one of them is super random, but I bet I'm not the only one, because there's this part in the opening where Lloyd steps over Bond while they're in the living room and like puts a tray on the coffee table and then closes the like
drapes
and then steps back over him, and the way it looks like awkward and not human. I hate it
because it's like he's like stuck to this one plane and can't move out of it,
and it's just like, why? Anyway, this isn't about what I didn't like about it, so this is about the ending, which is delightful as always.
My second pick, all these endings just seem like me, like, sticking in things I couldn't stick anywhere. So mine says Anytime, Anywhere by Millet from Frieren Beyond Journey's End, the first and technically the second opening, but ending. I mean, they're both technically the same song. We just get different verses, but they're both great. But the first season just has this, like, you know, just amazing, unique art style. It's just a great song. Really much better than the opening. Captures, like, the feeling of the show. It's another one where, like, man, ending amazing, opening really mid. to otherwise great shows. But it was just like, you know, you might have skipped the opening, but you always listen to the ending of this one. And it was just, you know.
I almost picked that one too, Al. Actually, I want an honorable mention in here. The Frieren insert song by Millet. Bliss, that was in episode 11. At the end of that, like, story in the North. Like, amazing, amazing. I love the way it was used in the episode. And just, like, made it feel finished. So, yes, really good. My final ending that I'm going to pick is the Jujutsu Kaisen Season 2 ending, second ending, More Than Words by Hitsuji Bungaku. That ending is, at first, it gets stuck in my head, so that's something I always think about when I'm doing a list like this. But also, like, coupled with the animation, it's just, like, a really bittersweet sort of ending where, especially I feel like once you see the end of the season, it has a nostalgic feeling, and it's because, like, these characters will never be the same. Like, they'll never be these carefree characters ever again.
It's almost a less train home kind of.
Yeah, no, totally. Like, it's like, oh, they're never gonna be this way. Except I feel like with Last Train Home, the animation itself is somber, but, like, in this case, it's, like, the juxtaposition of, like, the story and this song, and then, like, the ending animation itself is, like, them doing all these, like, super normal teen things, like, taking pictures and stuff like that, and it's like, oh, no.
Child is over.
Yeah, like, no, not anymore.
My last one is Fake It by Sawano Hiroyuki and Lako from Fake Strange Fake Whispers of Dawn. That just song got stuck in my head. Like, I was still listen to it occasionally. So, like, if it's that much of a earworm, I mean, I feel like Sawano Hiroyuki is famous for that, but, like, it was really, like, and plus it's a Fate thing, so it's gonna get a little more burred in my brain in general, but, that was just, like, I'm like, man, I cannot wait to see this as, like, a full opening in a full Fake Strange Fake anime. I just wanted to give that a shout out just for how much it stuck in my head.
Switching over to openings now, back to something that was on my favorite anime list, I have to call out the Trigun opening, Tombi by Kivi Baba. And just, like, setting an interesting tone for the series, both, like, musically and visually, and, like, just very memorable, I guess. Just had, like, the right vibe to the series. So, like, just different, I guess. We had a lot of the imagery of the desert. We have Vash kind of struggle in his struggle.
My first pick for best opening is Nemu Rasa Ratera Lineage by Juna from the Ancient Makus's Bride Season 2. It's the second opening. I think it's really, like, it's our main heroine, like, getting, like, trapped in this picture book as she, like, goes through pretty much the plot of the story, and it really emphasizes, like, the puppet master, and, like, you see, like, all the characters around her as, like, puppets, and you see, you know, you know, our main ancient magus kind of like trying to help out our heroine as she tries to like defy the story that the mastermind of the plot is setting for her. I think it works like really well for like this whole season of like, now that we know that there's a mastermind behind the mystery and what's going on in the school, and like just a well done representation and just a nice song. I like the first opening, but I feel like there's like just a bigger thematic weight to like, it's just very clever visually because of that, and like also that all the other characters are like these little two dimensional like little puppet marionettes, but as she helps some of them, they become a little more three dimensional. And as she kind of learns about them in the story, but also she kind of gets them away from the puppet master, I thought it was very, it works on several levels. I like that. I thought it was a very clever opening.
Yeah, I that sounds really cool. When I get up to it, I'll be sure to really pay attention to that. I like an opening that's like ties into the theme of that. You know, like a lot of times it's just like some really cool animation and a song, which like we're not immune to. We love that. But I like that there's a sort of an extra layer there. My two other openings are actually from the same show. So Jujutsu Kaisen just gets like top billing for music. If I have nothing else good to say about the series, occasionally I do, but it's going to be the music was incredible. And both the first opening, Ao no Sumika by Tatsuya Kitani, and then opening two, which I think is like exploding, like very, very popular specials with a Z by King Nu. Yeah, like both of these openings, I think, tie in really well to their parts of the arc. They set the tone. And similar to the ending that I really liked, I think the first opening is like this very upbeat sort of song, and the animation really flows really well with it. But once you know what happens in that arc, it becomes very like the opening becomes sad as the arc goes on, because like, you know, it's not like, oh man, everybody's having good fun school times or whatever. No, not so much. And then the second opening is so dark, and I love all the patterning, and the lighting is very interesting in that second opening, and like just really like brings you into the vibe so well. Ooh, and it's like a little bit terrifying. Yeah, I just think like Jujutsu Kaisen, could your story be as good as these openings and endings? Because I would really appreciate it. But I just can't quit you, I guess, right now. I just love these openings.
I was really close to putting that one on my list, and I'm like, I'm pretty sure, just like Kate met on the rest of it, man, has she liked those openings. And yeah, like specials is really good. I think it, because like to do this, I like basically looked at one or two like top 50 anime openings and endings, and I just basically like went through them to be like a refresher and be like, and then I was like, I've never seen, you know, Eden Saga season 2, so I have no idea. But oh, I remember that show, and that was good, but not, oh right, that was awesome. And what do you call it? That was like, I think usually like top 3 on a lot of people's lists. But I was like, I agree. I just, what do you call it?
And I think both openings, I think they do a really good job of syncing the music to like
what's happening.
Not just like what's happening, but like the beat will like connect with like somebody's movement, or like just many openings try to do that and like do it to some extent. But I just feel like the way that they did it in these openings is just like, superb, like so good. I want to love you as much as this, please. Jujutsu Kaisen, please somebody come talk to me who isn't like obsessed with Jujutsu Kaisen and thinks it's like the greatest thing that ever happened. If you are out there, but you still like it, you can't just be like, oh, I'm a hater and I hate it. I don't want to talk to you because that's not useful. But if you're just like, I like it, but I think it could be better, come talk to me.
My second was a little bit of a hard choice, but I wanted to narrow it down to one. So I picked River by Anonymous. Anonymous would be
wait, I was like, is it Anonymous? What is it?
Anonymous with in the center of an S and a Z. From Vinland Saga Season 2. That's the first opening of Vinland Saga Season 2. I think they're both good openings, but I feel like River really just has a little more weight as this like song about like regret and just kind of wallowing in your decisions and like kind of like really well encapsulates kind of the feeling of the first half of the season and like kind of flowing along in the first half. Like the second opening is by like Survive Said the Prophets and more like screamy metal, but that's also when there's a lot more violence going on, and then by it's a lot more appropriate, and there's a lot more violence in the opening, but that's because things have definitely kicked up a notch, especially by the end of that season. But I think they're both good, but I think there's a certain strength in River, and it's just kind of like melancholy as like Thor and Finn is kind of stuck and like unable to grow till he meets the other guy on the farm, and kind of like gives you a good sense of where he's at the beginning of the season. And I like a lot of the like there's a lot of interesting techniques of like mirroring and like how like things are framed and move in and out of each other or flow, definitely like a in a river. So it stood out. Though I think once again both are strong contenders. I think River just went a little above. Also, just the screen metal at the end of the season 2 just seems a little like it's not all scream metal, because definitely scream metal at the end, but that's also like the height of the violence, so it kind of fits for Vikings.
But you felt like it was too on the nose
a little bit. Still good, but just not River good.
I already told you my
Right, you got to give two. My bad.
So you get to go. What's your number one?
Once again, I feel like possibly a little too basic, but I picked Idol by Yasuobi from Oshinoko. Okay, once again, it was a song that was stuck in my head. Also, as a person who lives with a roommate that loves VTubers. VTubers covered the shite out of that song.
I think it was just a big song of the year. Because it was on the... There's a Japanese sort of variety show sort of thing at the end of the year where it's all music. Yeah. And it was like... They had her on and she sang it. So, like, and I think... It might have been like the final song of the year. It was something. So it was a big song, just like even pop culturally.
So yeah, it stuck in my head. I thought it was like well done. I mean, there have been whole videos on like, on it. So I don't feel it's anything surprising, but it stuck with me. So definitely something that, definitely I think it helped catapult that series in general. As always, it's one of those things I wonder where we'd be like, oh, that song Idol, that came from that show. Oshinoko.
Oh yeah, I'm sure.
I don't think it's going to be full like the opening to Aquarion, where like more people know in Japan the you're like, oh, that came from an anime.
We didn't do like multiples for the movie section, mostly because unfortunately I don't get to see a lot. I mean, I did see some movies this year, but like some of them I didn't like, so I don't want to pick. So I'm just picking one. Al, yeah. Do you have more than one, or you?
No, I just had one. Okay, and it's an OVA, so.
I feel like this year I didn't get to see a lot of.
And there was movies. Stuff I wanted to see. I wanted to see the Psycho Pass movie. I wanted to see.
The Gridman movie. I really want to see that.
Did One Piece Red come out this year, or at least was that last year?
I think it was last year. I don't know why I said that. You know, I never know.
I definitely wanted to see One Piece Red.
Yeah. There's a lot to be seen. So try to get in more, I think, maybe this year.
I just wanted to quickly shout out Fate Strange Fake, Whispers of Dawn. I really enjoyed like their preview of Fate Strange Fake. It gave me a lot of confidence that the TV series will be entertaining.
Dog!
Yeah, what do you call it? Wolf, actually.
Wolf, yes, even better.
Since no one is translating those novels, I'm very curious. I mean, it's, you know, the author of Bakano and, and Typhoon together. So, you know, chocolate and peanut butter. Yay! I look forward to whenever more Strange Fate comes out.
I am going to pick Spy Family Code White, which came out in December. And of course, I couldn't have seen it if I hadn't been in Japan. So it's sort of a special occasion, I guess, because normally it's because it's not out in English and I didn't watch it by illegitimate means. And I did watch it in Japanese without English subtitles, and I don't know Japanese, so, but it's not that complicated. I felt confident going in that, like, I would be able to follow, like,
the general 90%
of what was going on, and the person I was with did speak Japanese, and so once we conferred afterwards, yes, I was correct. I had not really missed anything. I missed some, like,
minor plot ideas.
I feel like plot wise I didn't miss maybe like one small thing that I missed. I'm more like dialogue gags is more what I missed, but like, you know, Spy Family, there's a lot of visual gags. You know, it's not the most complicated story, and that's doubly so for this non-canon movie.
I'm just imagining like Anya as a Legend of Galactic Heroes character, and like, you know, with the little title bar under her, and like being involved in political intrigue.
Yeah, like it wasn't that. It was basically a Detective Conan movie without a mystery. So like big set piece, spectacle sort of thing. There's like a kid plot and an adult plot. So everybody at the movie, you know, really has like a character to follow. Shockingly, I guess I'll just use this as my short review also of the movie. But like, so it's not a canon story. So like, you know, Lloyd has to go on this mission in here, and like Anya and Yor go with him, and like they go to this other part of the country, and you know, they're taking on this particular bad guy. And like, I feel like halfway through the movie, you're watching and you're like, okay, how is this? This is not canon. So like, does everyone in this movie just die because of like plot things? It's like, well, Lloyd and they know, like, they've seen him and, like, all this stuff. And it's like, actually, yes, there is a very high body count in this movie. I don't feel like it's, like, a direct, like, Lloyd doesn't just, like, headshot 60 people or something. But, like, ultimately, a lot of people die in this movie in order to facilitate it being like
a bottle episode.
Yeah, because it's like, well, like, yeah, the otherwise people would know things about characters and know like certain relations and all this stuff. So while it's not like the most brilliant thing you're going to watch, it was incredibly entertaining. It was really funny. It was very fun, really enjoyable. I look forward to it coming out in English, and I'm sure everybody will like have a very good time with it. All right, let's wrap up the year with our favorite characters.
Okay, I'll pick with my more expected character, and then I'll go for my least less expected character, or at least more interesting. I've technically told you my picks already, so it's a fact if you remember. But I'm going to start with Aya Rindo from Undead Girl Murder Farce. I thought she was a fun detective with a unique style, being just, an immortal who has her body stolen. So she's just this head in a cage. But she has a, like, very Sherlockian approach to her detective, with a very acidic wit that works well with our main protagonist bouncing off her very well, with a kind of like a bonsai comedy duo. In fact, he very clearly like tries to play towards bonsai. He's like very, it is both in the story, but it's also the character actively like trying to like do manzai. It is like a conscious thing on his a part to play into the, and Aya is more than happy to I don't remember the terms, but like, you know, the comedic foil to his straight man. Well, she's the straight man to his comedic foil. There are terms for it in manzai comedy, but I don't remember what they are. And she's just a fun, like, you know, and she just, like Kate said about, like, the comedy, the writing being so sharp. She's just very good at, like, you know, just adding to that. And I thought she was just a delightful detective character.
And how often do you get to pick just a head as, like, a character of the year? I feel like this is probably the only time. So take that.
Well, Kate,
take that when you can.
What do you call it? We could have had Salty from.
That's the opposite. She's missing her head.
Yes, true enough. And what do you call it? If Dora had done her dirty.
I'm over it.
My roommate still isn't.
He just mentioned
being bitter about her last week.
Look, I can't compete with the grudges held in your household.
In general.
I just can't. You have long memories there, just like the internet. All right, so I'm going to pick. I think there's a through line in my choices. Prospera, mom, also known as Momsnable, lovingly, from The Witch from Mercury. And this is Siletta's mother, who is out for revenge in all of the wrong ways, but doing it in a way that you're just like compelled by her. You know, it's the type of character that you just can't stop watching and, like, just waiting for the next, like, their next plot.
As TV Trips would say, a magnificent bastard character.
Absolutely. And also, I mean, by the end, you know, she has, like, a turn and really starts to question sort of what she was doing and why she was doing it and, you know, what are the results of that. So, like, she also has, like, you know, more than Char, has a lot more remorse in her than.
Don't worry. Char Momsable's counterattacks, she'll try to drop Access on Earth.
You know what? I'm here for it. Yeah.
So maybe she'll do a reverse because she's like anti-space. Maybe she'll like try to lob stuff at space colonies.
I think she's changed her tune a little bit by the, you know, potentially by the end. But
don't worry, there'll be like a, what do you call it? There'll be a Camille who has a tragic fault that turns her back to evil. It's, you know, it's the Gundam way.
But those versions of Char, not as good as OG, I think, for me. So Momsible, you'll always have a special place in my heart, even though I'm not saying you're a good person or like that I agree with what you've done. But compelling.
Just compelling. A delight to watch.
Yeah, absolutely. Could not wait to see what she would do next.
I wanted to pick somebody I thought just was an interesting character. And it just struck me when I was just thinking. And I'm just surprised I never picked them before. I'm going to pick a kind of, not an utterly minor, but possibly a little less highlighted character than one would pick, which is Gen Asagiri from Dr. Stone. I was just thinking about characters this year, and I just think he's such an interesting character because he's basically like kind of like a John Edwards when he starts, and you know, because Dr. Stone, there's the old world, you know, before everybody gets turned to stone, and then certain people are, you know, natives to the, you know, the stone world, and then there are people who are reawakened. And he's one of the, you know, old world characters. And he's like one of the first villains you meet who's like this kind of like John Edwards, like fake psychic, kind of like a, or like a, I'm trying to think of like the guy who used to bend spoons.
Uri Geller?
Yeah, Uri Geller type character. But he's like famous on TV for, you know, and he's like very, basically a con man and very slick. And, he like quickly joins the good guy's side, and generally, cause our main character is like, you know, kind of like the stereotypical like super smart but like not good with people. He needs Gen to like kind of like interact with people they need to win over, and like kind of like con people into doing the good thing. And I just. Is an interesting character because I feel like it's interesting to see a character like that be kind of like one of the main good guys and like one of the main like protagonists, and also that he's just like kind of like our, you know, our main character Dr. Stone, utterly garbage in combat. So like if both of them are together and there is any kind of combat threat, they are act like that is like once or twice that happens, but like they're like, oh, I can't talk my way out of this, oh, I can't science my way out of this, oh no, we are in major trouble because none of the combat characters are with us now, we have to really work hard to get out of this because if it comes down to fighting, we are both dead. And I just think he's like a fun character that I just feel like is like kind of like a twist on a character in a way that I just always found amusing. I just find him very enjoyable of how he like, you know, gets people to do things. Because you get the feeling in the past he just did things to profit himself, but now he's getting people to do things that are in their best interest, but they must not realize it.
Does he have a special moment in the recent arc? Is that what you were thinking?
I think the one that I really liked was the kind of like the chief basically like enforcer for the basically the head of the petrification kingdom tracks down their base, and they don't have any of their fighter characters, and the few fighter characters, they're like, if we send any of our fighter characters against them, they're all dead. So we'll buy ourselves a few seconds of life, and then we'll die as well. And Gen is able to like know how this guy thinks to get at least an alliance with him long enough for them to come up with a new strategy and not die there, at least, and you know, and stall time for some of their better fighters. And then that's still, they still have to do some things. But I just remember like them being totally down and being like, oh, well,
This is it.
this is it. None of us can beat him. We don't have like anything. We don't have like a weapon or something or like a science thing. And we're just like reviving people. And so like we just got like the ability to revive people back. So we're definitely down a lot of our members. And like, and he like is able to like just like with a mixture of bluffing and like being able to read him and kind of like playing like on like his twisted nature, like convince him, oh, we're on top. Oh, you beat us. I guess you forced this like concession out of us, but it was really, what do you call it, the concession that I wanted all along.
Is he like a brain battle character, but he's in a combat series?
Well, there's a lot, there's a little bit of combat. There's like, it's almost like the GM, if you were like put in role-playing terms, the GM throws in like sometimes you have to pass a strength check, sometimes you have to pass an intelligence check, sometimes you have to pass a charisma check, and every once in a while he's like, I'm gonna use charisma to get through this strength test.
Gotta go with what you're good at.
And I just thought he was just an unusual character and delightful character. I just wanted to give him a shout out in this year end review. Just I was like, I was thinking about, like, I haven't shouted him out as just a fun character in that series.
All right, so I feel like Al was like, he thought he was being really basic. And so now that's my turn, I guess, because my other character of the year is Aqua from Oshinoko. And he is hell-bent on some revenge. He is going to dismantle everything from the inside as he climbs the ladder of the entertainment industry. He is going to find out who his father is, why his mom is dead. And I feel like take down a whole bunch of other people and so in ancillary stories as the series goes on, as long as he doesn't forget his purpose, which is something I'm mildly worried about. But anyway, so I just again this character who like is plotting at all hours of the day, and like everything he is doing is plotted even when you think it isn't. I just love characters like that, and I love being able to like be in his head and like know when he gets like this glint in his eye that like, something has gone according to plan. I just like
This should be a
like
Kukaku.
just so fun. And that's the through line in my characters. Revenge is always in style, you guys, and it's my favorite thing. And I'm so glad that I got to pick it for both of my characters this year.
Yeah, he's interesting in like, I think he can be both shocking in the times that he's kind and like will go against his plans and shocking in the moments when he's ruthless and like doubles down on his plans, and you're like, ice cold.
Yes, I love when that happens. Like the ruthlessness is chef's kiss. So can't wait to see what he does next. All right, so I think that wraps up our faves from 2023. Final thoughts?
I just wanted to know if you had any final thoughts about the year in general. Just because I mentioned this a little before. I was just a little disheartened by like all the news that's come out about like the terrible work. I mean, I think we've always had an idea, especially just as people like to read stuff about, read articles about insiders talking about stuff and read interviews and stuff that like, you always see like, wow,
that mangaka died super early, or like, that animator died like in his late 50s. That is, you know, like one. Of course, it's statistically going to happen when it happens to a lot of people. But like a lot of the news, just like the news about just people talking about being a little more bold to talk about their experiences inside the industry. I mean, the story about just the horrible crunch inside of Jujutsu Kaisen to get the crazy animation that we've seen this season. The fact that, you know, very publicly, one of the people there tried to commit suicide because it was just so heartbreakingly hard there. And just like, I don't know, it feels like I still enjoy anime, but it does feel like, feels like something has to change. Like something has to, these people who do so much to bring us, you know, stuff that we love. And we just talked about that, that they should be treated better than what they're being treated now. They should be able to go into work and, you know, and I think a lot of them enjoy their work, but not have to have it balanced out by just ruining parts of their lives. And I don't think that's fair. Hopefully this year is some kind of a wake-up call to a lot of that.
I mean, I agree with you, Al. I think one of the things that is required for change is for people to actually talk about it within their own industry. You know, I think it's already become a topic, like, on the American side. I think it's come up a lot. We've seen many articles about it over the last few years about, like, the working conditions. But I think something that has to happen is, like, those actual workers have to talk about it. And I think that's maybe what we're seeing change, where, like you said, like, a lot of this was actual animators talking about what was going on. And so that's, like, the first part of it is that, okay, well, if people just stay silent about it, it can't change, and that, like, the actual workers have to, on the public side, essentially, like, let it be known. So I hopefully that is, you know, helping to drive some change. And, you know, and I know certain studios are better known for their working conditions than others. And I think the other thing that I feel has been talked about, but is sort of a similar but separate part of it, is, like, not only are the working conditions so intense, but they're also not being paid that well. And, like, paying somebody well does not give you the right to exploit them. So, like, we have to make sure we don't, like, fall into the, like, that basically that's how Amazon works, is that, like, they're always touting that they pay more than, like, minimum wage. Like, they pay all this. And it's like, yeah, but then they also treat you, like, really badly. And, like, so I think we have to make sure we don't, like, be like, well, we're paying them better, so therefore it's fine.
We don't have to change anything.
And I'm not saying they're getting that either. They're not getting either at the moment. So, like, trying to, you know, balance the scales more for people is really important. And I'm glad that you brought it up. And, like, yeah, I did feel like it's something that we love. This has always been a problem. I don't think it's a new problem at all for the industry. But I think it's something we're all becoming more aware of. And hopefully that awareness can lead to change for the, like, for something that we all love so much. I think I don't know so much. I think the hard part right now is, like, as a fan, I don't really know how to
encourage a change.
Yeah, or, like, because, like, you know, like, the, I guess, like, it's similar to, like, the Hollywood sort of strike, right? It was like, oh, well, they've asked you to, like, not talk about this, or, like, but, like, it's hard to support from, like, this end of things, I think, because the way our dollars are spent is like not like, I don't know. It, do you know what I'm saying? Yeah. Sorry, I'm not like being real like concrete there, but it's a little bit hard. Like, obviously we should speak out and say to companies like, here's what we want. And we, you know, like expressing that is very important. But like,
sometimes the message that corporations take away from how you spend is not the message that you want.
But then also, if you're not a customer for something, then you don't, you can't drive change either. I don't know. It's like, it's so complex, you know, because like, I don't know. I feel like I'm veering into like much different topics here, but like, there's a lot that people talk about in terms of like, oh, do boycotts, like, what do they accomplish in certain ways? And like, there's just different things, different thinking. And also, as an American fan, trying to affect change in another country is also even more removed. Mm-hmm. So like, and also I think you have to be careful culturally that I don't like, you know, a country's culture has to be like in change, and that culture needs to be driven by that culture and not like outside forces. So like, I don't know. It's very complicated, I guess. But I think hopefully we can support the things that we love and the people that are making them, and, you know, try to like whatever they tell us we need, I guess is what I'm saying, is that that's what we should do, and like not try to like unilaterally do something. Like, tell me what to do and I will try to do that thing from people from the inside. And maybe we will get more information about that. Maybe there will be movements. I don't know. I hope so. Well, that was a, you know, somber way to end the 2023, but...
Does that help that every time I do this list now and I go on Wikipedia, I mentioned this last year, it still affects me. Every year I go onto Wikipedia and I like, anime 2023. And it's like, film releases, anime releases, death in the industry of the indie.
Right, right. And we did have some big, you know, big losses this year. So, I mean, it's important to think about the somber things from the year too. So I'm glad that you brought it up here at the end. But that does wrap up 2023 officially for us. The next episode of the podcast, we will be talking about the new season. So time to, you know, start the new year right. Yeah, we'll see you next time. Please come tell us your favorites from 2023.